7 seconds.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh. Hmm. I guess I need to play this then.
Welcome. This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, the whole time doing this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwineTTR. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwineTTR. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Yeah. Yay! All right. Thank you.
I think that's the same crowd we had last time. It sounded similar.
I think so, yeah. It sounds like it.
Yeah, it sounds like.
Maybe they just hung out, took a room. They enjoyed it so much, took a room. We give them nice wine, and they took a room, stayed the week, and visited some of the Florida attractions, and came back
well, good
for
that.
Yeah. Thanks, people, for hanging out. I appreciate it. Yeah. Another episode of All About Wine, live.
It's Thursday. It's live if it's Thursday, September 9th. So it's not Thursday, 7 p.m., September 9th, 2021. We're not really live.
We're not live. That's true. Yeah. Okay, September 9th. Okay, what do we got here? Okay, September. September is California, Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina Wine Month. It is...
Wow.
Yeah, I know. They try to squeeze as many... It's not... There's a wine month almost every month of the year, but not all 50 states are represented honoring a wine month. I don't understand that. I mean, you've got Illinois, you've got Missouri, you've got North Carolina and California. Those, not all those are noted as big wine states, but those are actually wine month celebrated for those states.
We could have like a national wine celebration and, you know, for all the states, and then we can invite California. I didn't realize the drummer came in today. Okay, cool. Nice to see you.
Yeah, he did.
for the states, you know, just like a either month or, you know, whatever, just something that's, you know, backed and they don't have a I know there's a National Wine Day. I know, or is that regional also? Because I've heard of, you know, National Red Wine or
there's
white wine.
A little bit of everything. There's International Cabernet Sauvignon Day. There's
right.
International. Coming up on the 11th is International Grenache Day. And let's see. Back last month, there was an International Rosé Day. And, National Wine and Cheese Day was way back in July. And, there's just all sorts of I was saying last week, I found a whole bunch of stuff. Even, you know, here, June the 3rd is Sommelier Day. So they even get their day. In June, you have Idaho, Ohio, and Iowa Wine Month back in June. This is interesting. Back in May, Oregon Wine Month, but you also have Finger Lakes Wine Month. In May, not New York, but Finger Lakes. So and then May the 25th is National Wine Day. So these, you know, like I was explaining last month, I found all these different celebrations in here. But this coming up, I think either tomorrow or Saturday, I'm not sure, you know, because they changed all these things. So, tomorrow the 10th is Port Wine Day, so that's a celebration. Being people aren't familiar with port, you really should be. It's a good drink. Usually sweet, but really good drink. And let's see.
I meant to ask you, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but you used to make a star fruit wine.
Yes.
And for some reason, I bet you I still have a developing bottle somewhere. I don't know. I have to check. But my neighbor down the street has a star fruit tree. And he brought over a bag of 30 of these things.
Oh, yeah. They're very prolific trees.
They're high in fiber. They're, you know, really good. And so I cleaned it, cut them, cut the ends off. And I didn't realize they had seeds in them.
But, uh-huh.
I was thinking, how many star fruits would you need roughly to make something like that, to make a wine? And because
I would get the star fruit in. Same thing with the orange and with the star fruit orange wines and key lime. I knew I made another one. I couldn't think of it. the key lime, star fruit, and orange. I would slice the fruit and just take the fruit itself and slice it, quarter it up, and stuff like that. And throw it in a barrel or a tank and just let it sit there. And the fruit would start crushing itself within each other. And I would stir it every once in a while, check to be sure that it wasn't molding or going bad. And then I would...
It doesn't have a long shelf life. I heard three days not refrigerated, maybe up to a week for refrigerated, and then that's it. So
it doesn't have a long shelf life. But I would start doing it
in a barrel.
I'd put it in the barrel, and then I did the wine wasn't 100% star fruit or 100% orange or 100% key lime. It was a percentage. Usually my percentages ran around 12 to 15%. Because the fruits would give the wine a whole lot of flavor. And then I would do the white wine and blend it with it. So the fruit, usually I would get the white wine up and ready to go and almost ready. And then I would do the fruit. And within within 2 or 3 weeks, the fruit would be ready. And I would blend it in with the white wine to the level of flavor that I wanted. And so, it wasn't just the fruit itself. I mean, the fruit itself, I can't see just 100% star fruit wine. It's so strong and so potent. I mean, you can, I never went above, like I say, 12-15% was about the blending ratio I had. And it was always, always good at that level.
Okay. But I kept tomorrow. Apparently, he's bringing a whole bag of dragon fruit because he grows dragon fruit.
Oh, does
and
he? Yeah.
I was like, Last time I made a smoothie out of it, which was pretty good. I mixed all kinds of like banana, dragon fruit, and I forgot what else went into it. Maybe some alcohol. I don't know. But anyway, it came out and it was good. And I don't know if there's any benefits to that yet. But
dragon fruit is it's really supposed to be high in antioxidants. Yeah.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
But it seemed to last longer. The star fruit, I put it on the counter, and it's like, 2 or 3 days later, it's like, it's done.
It starts getting softer and softer and softer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I used to take star fruit, because a lot of people don't know what it is. And I would go down to the store, and I'd buy a star fruit. And they were expensive. I mean, I don't know what they're at now, because I never buy them. But they were expensive. It would be like, a dollar, dollar and a quarter for one little star fruit. And
wow,
I would go down the store, I'd buy one, and then I'd show people. I said, you know what this is? And, 90% of people go, no, but... there'd be that 10% that, that's a star fruit. We used to have one in our yard or something like this. And then I'd go on from there. And the star fruit would go bad so fast, though. It only lasts me about a week and be so soft and mushy, I'd end up throwing away and stopping by the store and buying another one. So we had this one guy in our festivals that we were doing who was a woodworker. And
Don, wasn't it? Okay.
And very, very good woodworker. I mean, he was very, very talented.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, Don, I want you to make me a little star fruit. And he goes, a what? I go, a star fruit. I said, I want you to make me a little sample of a star fruit so I can show people instead of having to buy it. He goes, what's a star fruit? And I go, well, look it up. 2 weeks later, he came back and handed me this wooden star fruit that looked so real, I almost felt like I could cut it open and eat it.
I remember seeing that.
It was. He did a fantastic job of it. And people said, well, that's too big. And I said, no, it isn't. It's too big for Florida star fruits because they're usually pretty small. But, I was surfing one day when I was home and I came across Rachel Ray. This was quite a few years ago. And she said, and to add a little bit of spice to your salads, cut in some star fruit. She reached down below the counter and pulled up the star fruit that was the size of a football. I mean, it was enormous. And so, I know. Probably growing on her Rachel Ray star fruit farm somewhere, but it was enormous. Yeah. But,
I didn't know they expected.
They got a lot bigger than I ever thought too, after I saw that one. And so, but I used to use a wooden star fruit to show people because you're right. They go bad so quickly that I was constantly buying the thing.
I didn't know him. That was a great representation of what it looked like and the color and everything. And
he colored it. Yeah. You put little brown spots on it too, like star fruits get little brown spots. You put little brown spots on it. He did a great job on that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I've got that in a box around here somewhere too. I don't know where it is. I've got it in a box around somewhere. I couldn't see throwing it away because it was too good of a job. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But. You can make wine out of anything. It's unbelievable. If you really want to do it, you can make wine out of just about anything. All it takes is a little yeast to ferment, and it starts doing it. So,
good. All right. Well, I know he's got a lot of it down there, but I don't think it's enough to even think about that. Plus, I don't have the patience or the time or the chemical experience to even think about it. But,
very prolific trees. The starfruit trees, very prolific trees. I mean, people who have starfruit trees in your neighborhood are going around giving everybody bushel baskets full of starfruit. Here, for you, I mean, it's just like, they're very prolific. And a lot of people...
Yeah.
This is another problem with Florida starfruit. A lot of people cut down the trees after a few years because there's so much starfruit and it drops to the ground and it gets soft. And so squirrels and birds and all rats and all sorts of small rodents come in and start eating it, which in turn attracts snakes. Because the snakes know that all these things are going to be eating this fruit here. So the snakes come in and eat the rats and the squirrels and stuff like that. And so people cut down the trees because they get tired of the rats and squirrels and birds and snakes all over their yard whenever that starfruit. That's why they pick them as fast as they can and give them away to people because they're so prolific.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
It's just, I learned a lot about starfruit when I was doing the starfruit wine. So,
And I learned a lot too. So thank you.
Good. Educational program. If not about wine, then at least about starfruit.
Back to the topic. But it kind of worked into the same topic. I mean, it's starfruit
wine,
starfruit, and talking about that and some of the process there. Still on topic.
Actually, we can talk about any fruit and work it into wine because you can make wine out of just about anything. So, all right. So I've got some things to tell you. today, a few odds and ends here. I want to revisit, before the show's over too, I want Mike to pop in and tell about some of our past guests and some of the books and all that they offer. So, but we'll do that later. I got the latest issue of Wine Spectator in today, and I want to go through this quickly here about the Grand Tour, WineSpectator.com. Grand Tour, WineSpectator.com is the web address, and it's tastes exceptional wines rated at 90-plus points. There are three places, over 200 wineries, and every one of them is rated at over 90 points. So every one of the wines they have, all sorts of countries. You've got Argentina, Australia, Austria, and Chile, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Israel, Italy, New Zealand, Portugal, South Africa, Spain, Uruguay, and California, Oregon, Virginia, and Washington State from the United States. So a lot of representation, a lot of wines in there too. Las Vegas on Saturday, December the 4th of this year. You can, again, go to purchase tickets and learn more about the whole thing at grandtour.spectator.com. But the first one's in Las Vegas. Then they have one in Washington, D.C. on Friday, December the 10th. And then they end it back in Chicago on Wednesday, December the 15th. I'm surprised they're doing this on a weeknight, not a Friday or Saturday. But back in Chicago on Wednesday, December the 15th of this year. So tickets are on sale now. You can go again, grandtourwinespectator.com. They don't list the prices here. I don't know. They're expensive. You can get the what they call the VIP ticket, which gets you in a half hour or so earlier, or you can just do the regular tour and all that. But it's all cool. St. Michel Wine Estates has been sold. I told you that previously that they were up for sale. They are sold. Sycamore Partners has bought them. Chateau St. Michel also has the brand 14 Hands. You may have seen that. Very good wines. Chateau St. Michel has always done excellent wines. I mean, they have for years. I have drank their wines for a long time. But the company that bought them, Sycamore Partners. Now, Sycamore Partners is a investment group, if you will. They have holdings and brands including Staples, Express, Loft, Ann Taylor, Commerce Hub, and Lane Bryant. And the limited. So, they're quite diversified as far as a holding company. Now they can add Chateau St. Michel to their portfolio. Chateau St. Michel sells 7.3 million cases a year. That's 60% of all Washington wine sales by volume. Wow. 2020 sales topped $614 million. They are the eighth largest U.S. wine company by sales in the country. Farms nearly 30,000 acres of vines in Washington, Oregon, and California. So they are enormous, obviously. Sycamore Partners holds more than $10 billion in capital. They were founded in 2011 by Stefan Kalinsky and Peter Morrow. And they made their reputation by turning around Talbot's and Zales when they were both failing the jewelry stores. They got those and brought them back to life. And then they says that they own more than 25 brands. And I just told you some of their. Nine West is another one that's included in that list. And the Limited, they are quite diversified. So Chateau St. Michel is not going to change. They said they bought into it and they just want to add them to their investment portfolio. and that's all. They're not looking at changing them or doing anything other than just having them part of the Sycamore group. Okay. Oregon and Washington are facing record heat. Salem, Oregon on 6/29. This is, well, we're already 9, but this was obviously a month and a half ago. But Salem, Oregon hit 117 degrees Fahrenheit. Walla Walla, Washington hit 116 degrees Fahrenheit on the same day. The day before on the 6/28, Portland hit 116 degrees Fahrenheit, and Seattle on the 28th hit 108 degrees Fahrenheit. They have never seen this level of heat before in that area. They said it is just unbelievable, but the vineyards are surviving. They are warning them. They're able to pump water onto them to keep them alive. They were getting enough rain. The West is parched, but up there in the Northwest, they're still getting some of the rainstorms coming in, and it's keeping it wet enough that it did not affect the grapes this year. Excuse me. The only concern is that this may continue, and if it continues, then it's going to create a major problem for the growing areas up there. Wine Spectator's New York Wine Experience. This is a 40-year anniversary. They do this every year. This is a cool thing. They have all sorts of participating wineries. The Critics' Choice Grand Tasting is Thursday, October 21st, and Friday, October 22nd. And just more wineries than I could. Well, I can name them all, but there's no reason to. But there's a lot of big names here, names that you've heard, that you've tasted, that you have, and all that. It is also includes the top 10 wines of 2020, and the top three of 2019 are going to be part of the tasting. They have wine stars are going to be there, famous vintners and winemaking celebrities. They are going to have a tribute to Ernest Gallo, who has passed away not too long ago. I'm trying to think how long ago. I can't remember. They are going to have chefs. Emerald is going to be there. Danny Meyer, Eric Rippert, all sorts of people going to represent. The weekend reservations are sold out, but you can join the wait list. It is nywineexperience.com. And at least get on the list. Maybe next year you can be part of it too. This is going to be October 21st to the 23rd, New York City at the Marriott Marquis. And it is really a fascinating event, something that you would remember and talk about for years to come. Wine calories. Here we go again. Some more stuff on wine and the good or bad for you. I was glad I found this because last Friday I went and saw a rheumatologist. I have problems with gout. And I tell you what, if you've never had gout, then you're lucky. And if you have had gout, my sympathy goes out to you majorly. It's painful. Whenever they talk about these old kings and stuff like that in the medieval times that would suffer from gout, you can understand why they were mean and why they cut off people's heads. I mean, it was just so painful. But gout now is something that can be treated as a steroid shot and just knocks it out right away. But you have to go through the pain before the steroid shot. And so I went and saw the rheumatologist, and he said, I'm going to show you a chart. And he showed me a chart and the things that don't aggravate gout. Dairy products, surprisingly, does not aggravate gout. He said you can drink as much milk or eat as much cheese or cottage cheese or yogurt or whatever you want, dairy products, and it will not affect your gout at all. He said what will affect your gout more than anything is beer. beer, he showed, he said, one serving of beer causes the percentage to increase this amount. Then he showed me a chart and he said, two servings and three servings of beer, you're going to get an attack because it's that high in gout potential. Hard liquor was almost as bad as beer, but not quite. It would jump up and it will cause problems. But wine, on the other hand, doesn't affect it. Very, very little movement on the chart on drinking wine. And even the more you drink, it tends to have less of an effect on the gout. You have one drink and it'll jump up a little bit, but then by the time you have three drinks, it's dropping below the effective level. So wine is, and he told me that, and I was ecstatic. I figured, wow, this is worth a visit to the rheumatologist by itself, just to know that I can drink wine. It's going to help stop the gout a little bit. But I found out. But then I saw this article too. Wine calories may pull their own weight. It says a glass of wine contains about 125 calories. But, excuse me, but the calories may be counteracted as wine's polyphenols help burn them. Oh, that's a great thing. So you can have wine and the polyphenols in a wine. One glass of wine is approximately 125 calories, but people are not considering that the wine may be counteracted by the polyphenol content in it. So one of the mechanisms that this works is it helps support weight loss in thermogenesis, or the thermogenic effect, a metabolic process during which humans burn calories in order to generate heat. And it's as we drink wine during meals, we observe that when you drink red wine in moderation during meals, you're not adding more weight or abdominal fat. Polyphenol compounds seem to be responsible for this weight control health effect. They have also been shown to improve microbiota and increase thermogenesis. So, there you go. Have yourself wine with your meal. It's not going to cause a problem, and it's not going to cause weight gain or anything. Again, everything in moderation. So always keep that in mind. But this is the researchers found that moderate red wine intake was associated with a decreased prevalence of metabolic syndrome, a group of conditions that also increase the risk of heart attack, stroke, and diabetes. And so mainly by reducing the odds of having an abnormal waist circumference, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. So it will help fight all that stuff. So enjoy your glass of red wine with your meal. It is definitely there, and it's definitely going to help you, and it's definitely going to taste good. Okay, now I had something here. Let me find it. Oh, here it is. Big Smoke. I don't know if you're out there, if any of you are cigar smokers, but I belong to I belong to a discussion group. One of our guests we had on the show was into cigars and all that. Let's see, what is his website? I can't think of it right now. Boy, I'm terrible about that stuff.
I think it was, let me check and make sure before.
XYZ, ABC, what?
It was Kaplowitz.xyz. Kaplowitz.xyz, yes. Okay. And he has all his shows on there.
Yeah. Has all these shows on there, and I'm part of the discussion group. We discuss a little bit of everything. There's quite a diversified group on there, but cigars seems to be one of our topics we discuss quite often. And if you're interested in cigars, check that out, Kaplowitz, XYZ.XYZ. But Cigar Aficionados, Big Smoke, Las Vegas weekend at the Mirage. It's November the 5th and 6th, 2021. Tickets are going fast, so you need to get them pretty fast. The seminar ticket packages is sold out, but the Big Smoke evening tickets are selling. You need to get that. Big Smoke is back, safe and fun-filled. So it's a safe event. They promote safety. In fact, all these events promote safety because of the COVID. The Big Smoke evening consists of two unforgettable nights of cigars, food, drinks, and more. You can collect premium cigars from some of the best cigar makers in the world, and Cigar Aficionado included with every ticket. And the seminars are sold out, so I won't read you about that. But the Big Smoke evenings just sounds like a great event in itself. So if you are a cigar smoker, go to LasVegasBigSmoke.com. It's all one thing, LasVegasBigSmoke.com. And you can get your tickets for that. November 5th and 6th, and both nights they have the Big Smoke evening event. So you can check that out. And let me see. There was one other thing I wanted to tell you that was in here. And let me see if I can find it quickly, because if I can't, I'm not going to spend a lot of time searching. Oh, they have a good article. That's right. They have a good article on New World Wines versus Old World Wines. A very good article, actually. I mean, I honestly think it's worth the price of the magazine, this issue of the magazine alone, just for this one article. Wine Spectator, I guess this is because they subscribe, they don't have a price on it. But Values Showdown is the name of the article, and it's Old World versus New World Wines. And the selections they've chosen for this roundup are all rated 88 points or higher, and all priced at $25 or less. So there you go. I mean, you can't ask for a better list of wines that are within, that are within your budget. So, but they have Cabernet, Merlot, and blends as the first section, and it's Old World versus New World, and they got the scores by, and every one of them, I mean, there's some 93-point wines here, 92-point wines that are like $20, $25 maximum stuff. Good thing. Then they have another section that is Malbec, and then Pinot Noir section. Then they have a Syrah, Syrahs, and blends section, and then Chardonnay, Old World versus New World. Then Rhone style wines, Old World versus New World. Then Riesling and Sauvignon Blanc. Pretty big section of Sauvignon Blanc. Very, very good. If you're looking at trying different wines from the New World and Old World and want to get some decent wines with good scores and keep the price down, you cannot go wrong with this article. This is one of the best ones I have seen in a long time to break everything down. So, Wine Spectators, the October 15th issue, and you can check that out. Okay, let me get here. If I can get this to my cursor to work. There we go. Okay, this is Castle Ridge Winery, Iowa. Castle Ridge Winery is located in Layton, Iowa. They are southeast of Des Moines. And phone number is not here, so I can't give you the phone number. But you can go to the website. It is info@tasselridge.com, TASSELRIDGE.com. They have recipes. They have all sorts of stuff here. I don't know. Are they open? Masks are required in the winery. Food tasting, wine by the glass, and food service not available yet. But you can still go to the winery. Package purchases are available, and prepackaged jellies, dipping oil, sauces, cheese for off-premise consumption, all that's available. And so, Tasso Ridge Winery, always good. Lot of Midwest grapes, and they're using some of the ones that will grow there, Edelweiss and some Norton and different ones from that part of the country, which you normally don't find in the West Coast and stuff like that. So their harvesting is being done now and probably will be for another couple of weeks yet. Maybe up until October. I don't know what their schedule is on that. But Tasso Ridge Winery, you can check them out the next opportunity you get if you're in that part of the country. Ron Rubin Winery. I get an e-letter from them. It's a very good e-letter. They're always telling us what's going on in the vineyard and what's happening. And they're in the middle of the crush now, harvest and crush. And they got a nice little video held telling about it. You can go to ronrubinwinery.com and see their e-letter there. It's again, it's informative and it's written by the winemaker himself. He does all the write-ups on this, and he shows the grapes and he talks about the weather and everything throughout the year. A good informative little piece there. So that's ronrubinwinery.com. Excuse me. My throat's getting scratchy here. Okay. Let's see. Not that. No. Okay, this is from Wine Folly. The question is asked, is this France's greatest wine-growing region, the Pinot Noir and Chardonnay region, and Burgundy? And it talks about that, and the Chablis and Burgundy regions. It's no definitive answer. You know, it's just a matter of taste on this. And that's after I read this whole article and all that, I'm going, well, you know, okay. It really boils down to, is this the best one out of France? Maybe, maybe not. So I saw that and just wanted to point that out, that it probably is noted as one of the better ones. The Beaujolais wines and stuff like that are really fantastic, but still some people are not big fans of it because it's too much for them. No, this is not spam. Okay. And let's see. Where is that one? Another winery that I had that I was going to talk about. And where is it? Oh, Rumbar Vineyards. Rumbar. I think they were a guest, if I remember correctly. Rumbar Vineyards. They have a new and improved digital experience. Excuse me. Says, we are thrilled to announce the launch of a new website for Rumbar Vineyards. It says, we strive for excellence in everything we do, from making high-quality wines, create an extraordinary experience with you, either in our tasting rooms or elsewhere around the world. We welcome you to visit and experience the new rumbar.com. And it is it's a cool site. So go to it. Rombauer.com, RombauerR.com. Simple as that. And check out their new site. And they got videos and new clubs and stuff like that. They are located in California, Napa Valley, and the Sierra foothills up north a little bit more. Actual tasting is in St. Helena in Napa. So check it out, though, rombauer.com. And let's see. Enery Winery. I had them saved. It's not here. Enery Winery is having all sorts of stuff going on at the end of the year here, or end of the season. They're doing fall stuff coming up, as is a lot of the wineries. So if you're into some of the fall stuff, contact your local wineries and see if they're having any fall events or anything like that going on. Okay, let's see. I thought I had something else around here. I guess not. Let me go to this and tell you some of the stuff I had on this. Is this... Okay. This is... Oh, this was an interesting article. Wine's gender split. How is wine being bought and approached by male and female? And this is an interesting article, short basically, but interesting. This has been a lot of sense that women buy more wine than men. But according to wine marketeers, gender split isn't necessarily one-sided, and it's much more complicated than just men buy more than women buy more than men, because you have to take price into consideration, you have to take the styles of wine into consideration, all that. Women buy more Prosecco, sparkling wines, Pinot Grigio, Sauvignon Blancs than men do. But that doesn't mean that men don't buy wine. They do. Usually men will buy wine, probably sherries and ports. This is something that women usually don't buy. And the sherries and ports, cost-wise, usually run a little bit more than a bottle of Pinot Grigio. So it screws the surveys off because of those things. It's not an easy subject to untangle. Gallup's 2021 alcohol beverage study was released in August, just last month. And they came up with a massive gender split. And the Gallup's poll found that only 15% of the men, U.S. men, who drink alcohol said they prefer wine over beer and spirits. And that the typical U.S. wine drinker was a college-educated woman 55 or older. On the other hand, men preferred beer by a more than 3-to-1 margin. Even more stunning in this survey, there was a second survey in a row from Gallup that reported the 15% number. So it was two different surveys that said that men only consume 15% of the wine, and that women are the ones who actually buy it. So what's going on here? The question begs to be asked. Well, here's the a poll by subgroup, and it shows that men prefer beer 54%. Wine 15% and liquor 28%. Women, on the other hand, beer 23%, wine 49%, and liquor 26%. And by age groups, 18 to 34, wine is only 22%, 35 to 54, 28%, and 55 and older, 42%. So that's where the age groups take over on wine, too, is on the older group, whereas the younger group, 18 to 34, beer is 45%. And then liquor, 30, 27, 23% respectively in each age group. So that doesn't vary a whole lot. Education does a little bit more here now. College graduate, 33% beer, 41% wine, 22% liquor, whereas not college graduates, 43% beer, 24% wine, and 30% liquor. And household incomes, lower income, beer, higher the income, wine. I mean, that's just basically the breakdown there. But they says that tracking this over a period of time and trying to get sense out of this isn't really the way to do it. Gallo has a strange methodology, or Gallup. Have I been saying Gallo? It's Gallup, the Gallup poll. Gallup poll has a strange methodology that they still use. They call. It is a landline, and they use also a small sample. They take a sample of telephone, and then they extrapolate from that what the percentage would be. So for this survey, 70% of the cell phones and 30% landlines gave them their numbers. Well, it would almost certainly make the results a little odd because of the fact that landlines probably are only used by older people. You're not going to get a whole lot of landlines in the 30-somethings. I don't even think most households have a landline in that age group. And they also are calling people. Other surveys have been taken that show a little bit different results when they do it online and ask people online how they're doing. So that's something else. Consumers younger than 50 aren't drinking as much. They also show that drinking Americans that actually drink alcohol now are at a 20-year low, and that's all categories. So that's going to be a little bit different. The another survey was done by the Fox Hill Group, and he pointed out to a wide-ranging pandemic drinking study that was concluded earlier this year and found that 3 out of every 5 consumers reported consuming less alcohol during the pandemic. Now, that really struck me as odd because you would think, especially with home deliveries jumping up and, you know, these companies that we've saw where they increased their sales by, you know, 2,000% and stuff like that, that the drinking would be higher during the pandemic. But this survey shows that 3 out of every 5 customers showed consuming less. So those 2 out of 5 are drinking an awful lot to get these numbers up. The pandemic survey queried 48,000 adults through the internet. They said if you use the landlines, you can get 60-year-olds and older. And if you use just cell phones, you're going to get 44-year-olds and younger. So they did it through the internet. And it says that the consumers are drinking less, but it's important to understand that it's probably for health reasons. And also, alcohol is expensive and for religious and moral concerns. These are things that the Gallup poll didn't really address in the different areas of this. And they also said that the Gallup poll didn't to really give a good cross section, especially doing it by phone calls. So They came up with the wine consumption among U.S. adults 21 plus. It shows that high frequency wine drinkers, more often than once a week, only 14%. And this is out of a base of 5,640 adults. 14% high frequency. Occasional wine drinkers, these are once a week or less often, but more than once every 2 to 3 months, 25%. Infrequent alcohol consumers, these drink alcohol, including wine, less than every 2 to 3 months, 10%. Non-wine drinkers drink beer and or spirits only, 26%. And teetotalers, 25%. So, according to this, you know, wine consumption is really down. So it's an interesting surveys there. Interesting things. I really thought that the wine consumption would be higher among everyone, because articles and things that I've read and I've shared with you show that wine is up in so many of the areas, but according to this, it's not. Wine consumption tends to be down a little bit. So there you go. That's interesting thing about the wine consumption during this pandemic. There is a winery that closed down, and they usually don't. Wineries are usually sold or passed down through generations or stuff like that, especially in California. But all around the world, you don't see wineries closing a whole lot. I closed Florida State's winery because, well, basically one main reason. I don't think anyone would continue caring about it as much as I did and continue the same quality I did. And that's really why it wasn't passed on and continued to stay open. I had to retire. The doctor told me my diabetes, because of Agent Orange in Vietnam, my diabetes was causing my body to do all sorts of weird stuff. And she highly suggested, almost demanded, that I close and retire. So I did. But I didn't pass it on to anyone because there was no one to pass on to. And I didn't sell it again because I didn't think the quality could... People, I don't think, would have taken the same pride in it as I did. So, back closer. Well, here's another one closed. Dirty and Rowdy Family Wines. They closed also. 11 years in business, they announced that they were dissolving. No changing hands, no transfers, just closed. And the reason is because the two owners decided that it was the best way to do it. Hardy Wallace, who goes by the nickname Dirty, and then Matt Richardson, who is known as Rowdy, said that they were just going to close it. It couldn't be Dirty and Rowdy without either a Dirty or a Rowdy. So they went out of it. Now, one of them, let me see if I can see it here in the article. Wallace. Hardy Wallace said that he is going to open up another winery, completely different name, everything else, and start another winery. The thing is with wineries now, and this is why it's so much easier to close a lot of wineries, is because they don't have a bunch of vineyards and a bunch of money invested in the vineyards and stuff, and trying to find a buyer and trying to find something. They just had a tasting room. They were purchasing grapes from other growers around Napa, and so it was pretty easy for them to just close the door. They also had a very, very big customer's email list and different wine club members and stuff, and so that was how they sold a lot of their wines too, through that. So they closed. And so if you're familiar with Dirty and Rowdy Family Wines, I had one a couple of years. Oh, geez. When was it? About 3 years ago, I guess it was. I had an opportunity to have a Dirty and Rowdy wine. It was good. It was very good. It was a Pinot Noir, I want to say. I believe it was. Pinot Noir or Merlot, I can't remember. I don't know. But they did an excellent job on their wines, but they're closing down. So, but like I say, they're going to be opening another one. Okay, in the Midwest, sweet wines are big business and they're majorly misunderstood. I'm going to be talking a lot more about sweet wines in Midwest because Missouri is trying to grow their wine industry. And because they're trying to grow their wine industry, they are in the center of that sweet wine, the Muscadine-style wines there. And so this article actually says that it's people know sweet wines, but they just got this thing about sweet wines in the Midwest. They just talk bad about them, and there's no reason to. They said there's some great sweet wines out there, Muscat. In fact, my granddaughter posted a picture of a wine that she got, and she goes, "Oh, I love this wine. It's a Muscat apple something, Muscat apple something. I can't remember what it is." But she said her boyfriend got it for her, and she goes, "Oh, he loves me. Look what he bought me." And I said, "I'm going to have to sit that boy down and talk to him about wines. I mean, you know." She said, "But I love this wine." And that's the key to it right there. There's just so many people who love those. This article here is talking about blueberry Moscato. I've seen strawberry. I've seen all sorts of different ones. Sweet reds, red blends, sweet red blends. These all are out there. And they really are a lot more popular than what we realize because it's, well, people have a sweet tooth, and that's really what it boils down to. So if you are a sweet wine fan, more power to you. I don't have anything against you on that. The sweet wines made from the Moscato grape, I'm not a fan, but I enjoy good sweet wine myself. Moscato, a nice Moscato, Gewurztraminer, some of these sweeter wines. Sauternes are one of the most expensive wines in the world. You got ice wines that are very expensive, and those are very, very sweet. So we're looking at more and more sweet wines coming out because of the acceptance, I think, of the sweet wines. So there you go. I'm going to let Mike take over for a couple of 3 minutes here and tell you about some of the guests we had back at the end of the last year and beginning of this one. We haven't talked about them in a long time. I want to remind everybody out there, have them check them out. So I'll let Mike do that, and then we'll close out the show.
All right. Let me get the record player set and get ready to play some music, and I'll take a deep breath and read the script live. Here we go. Okay, back in October, co-directors Mark Johnson and Mark Ryan and writer Michael Karam were on the show October 8, 2020. The movie Wine and War, The Untold Story of Wine in the Middle East, is about survival, resilience, and struggles. Wine has been in Lebanon culture for 7,000 years. They are raising money for CAPHO, a great organization, and you can go to wineandwar.com, wineandwar.com. Click the Watch Now button, and that'll take you to where you need to go to watch it. On October the 15th, Jim Loughran was on the show. He's a certified wine educator and author. You can visit jimloughran.com. That's Jim, LaughRen.com. And he has two quick books right now out called The 15-Minute Guide to Red Wine, which is only 28 pages of good reading, and 15-Minute Guide to White Wine, which is another quick read and a handy reference to have as well. Check that out on Amazon on October 29th.
Well, there he did it again. Goodbye, Mike. He does that. We joke each other about the fact that Mike disappears every night about this time. And I hope that was Mike and not me. Yeah, it was Mike because he's coming back now.
It's available at Barnes & Nobles, Amazon, and other outlets. On November 19th, we welcome Michael Brown, author of Pinot Rocks, and he's also a winemaker. The book is available on Amazon.com. Pinot Rocks is available in any format, and the audio format is great because William Shatner did the audiobook version of his book. That's right, Captain Kirk. On January 14th, we had a great conversation with Cap Kaplowitz, a podcaster and blogger of cigars, spirits, coffee, and wine. And All About Wine's own show host, Ron, is also the wine panelist on the show. For more information, visit kaplowitz.xyz. That's kaplowitz.xyz. On February 11th, 2021, we had founder and producer of Beer, Wine, and Spirits, Jeff Bradford, on the show, the filmmaker dedicated to revealing the stories behind the labels of our favorite drinks. On February 25th, we welcome Natalie McLean, podcast host of the popular Unreserved Wine Talk. She's also an author of Red, White, and Drink All Over, and Unquenchable, a tipsy quest for the world's best bargain wine, plus several quick reads available on her website. She is also the wine expert on CTV's The Social, which is Canada's largest daytime television show, CTV News, and Global Television's morning show. You can pick up her Ultimate Food and Wine Pairing Guide for free by visiting her website at nataliemaclean.com/allaboutwine. That's nataliemaclean.com/allaboutwine.
Thank you, Mike. You're going to stay with us the rest of the time now, I hope.
Yes, I reset my I didn't realize it was the top of the hour when it happened. I go, oh, what in the world?
I was done. Well, you were gone. I said, oh, there went Mike. I said, we've been having this issue every week. And so, you know, he'll be back with us in a second. And there you were. You popped back up. Yeah. So.
Yep. What's interesting is YouTube and Facebook did not get disconnected. It's only my connection to Blog Talk Radio. So they heard that without interruption. There you go.
Strange. Okay. Yet another strange thing on live, All About Wine.
Yes.
So
that's it. Why? If this was pre-recorded, you would not have heard that.
You would not have heard that. We would have skipped right out of that, and Mike would have edited it. That's one of the fun things about All About Wine.
Yes. Never know. So.
Irritating as all heck. But fun.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it started maybe, I don't know, 2-3 months ago, maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah.
It's just right at the top of the hour. It's I don't know. They're changing servers or something. I don't know what they're doing. But anyway, so there we go.
It's funny. It just it does that. And it just, we can't figure it out. So, oh, well.
You
okay.
used to be the one, and now I am.
Yeah, I used to black out and disappear too, so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Well, we're good. That takes it for this week, I believe. It is August, September the 9th, and we will be back September 16th, next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Facebook and YouTube. There you go. So thanks for tuning in, and have a great week. And I need to switch something over here. Here we go. Live radio, folks. All right, here we go. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next time.
Be safe out there. Thanks for listening.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Or it's also on Apple iTunes. It's on some other. Oh, hold on a second. And this one. still on. Okay. And close the windows out. Okay. I think we're good. Oh, we're not in the green room. And going to the green room.